fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. And in doing with the various shows that we do over 2,100 episodes, it's not often I get to say, well, we're talking about something we've never spoken about before. But today is just such a day I'm really excited about because I want to know more about this. And we're going to find out today about the art and science of face reading. Our guest is Jennifer LaMonica, and she has a recent book out, The Art and Science of Face Reading, Face Morphology in the Western Spiritual Tradition. She is a student in the lineage of Colette Abulker Muscat. I'm not sure if I got that pronunciation right. She is a doctor of chiropractic, a licensed acupuncturist, a certified nutritionist, certified imagery therapist, and a face morphologist. Also, she is a certified medical technologist. She has taught at the New York Chiropractic College, at the New York College of Traditional Chinese Medicine, and for the New York State Chiropractic Association. And she's been in private practice since 1984. She lives in New York State, and we're so glad to have her with us today. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
And thank you so much for having me here. I'm honored to be your guest.
Now, let me ask you, how did you discover face reading and get into this line of work? Because it seems like such a unique field.
Yes, I had a colleague of mine who was having marital difficulty, and he went to this doctor, Gerald Epstein, in Manhattan. And when he went there, it was the first time in his life he was encountered with this reading of his face. And what it did for them is that he just showed them each other's nature and revealed it to each of them. And all of these petty complaints that they had about one another sort of disappeared because they recognized that they came in with this. They came in with their nature. And once they understood it, their marriage is healed. They're still together to this day. So he, in turn, decided that he was a chiropractor. He is a chiropractor. And he, in turn, decided that he wanted to learn more about this to share with his patients. So he developed a class, and I was one of the first students in that pilot class, and that was in 1985. And I've been had been studying with Dr. Gerald Epstein, unfortunately, until his passing this past February. But that's how I learned about it, and it's a unique spiritual tradition that dates 4,500 years back. It was used in Egypt and Babylon and all of these spiritual places, and it was only transmitted literally by from student to teacher. It was not in the public domain. But about 5 years ago, it was decided that this could be released to the public domain.
Now, in terms of how this works, I mean, why do the features of our face, the structure of our face, why does it determine the kind of person we are, or traits, or personality, health, mental state, those kind of things? I mean, what is the mechanism? Because it would seem that I would assume, okay, let's say that my parent has a prominent nose, and I have a prominent nose. It would just seem like it's genetics. But it sounds like there's more at play. How does it work?
Well, it is genetic, and it's actually carried along the DNA. But if you go back to the Bible in Deuteronomy, it says we carry the errors of the ancestors to the fourth generation. So there's a belief that the soul is eternal, and it chooses its parents so that it can get a template. And that template will now determine the inclinations and personality. Now, as you come here on this earth, you know, this college that we all are here trying to develop ourselves, you will confront your inclinations, and then you make either corrections or you participate with them. If you participate with a negative inclination, then it just gets passed along to your children and so forth and so on, and it can go on for generations. So it's very interesting possibility, because we get to see that we can actually make a correction. And not only that, we can correct those that have passed before us. So it goes up as many as 10 to 100, depending on, in the old tradition, it was called a mitzvot or a good deed that was done. So let's say, for instance, you had an inclination to steal a pen, and you take that pen in your hand and you go, oh, wait a minute, I can't do this. Thou shalt not steal. So you put the pen back. Now in that action, you have just made a correction. Literally, according to this belief, your face will change. If the inclination of stealing was revealed in the face, it will change. And that's what is called the law of reciprocity. What is determined on the face is going on inside. And what is done inside gets revealed on the face. So you literally can change it. And that's why also your environment and your familial circumstances and everything that goes on in your life impresses upon the face, and then people can look at it and understand. You know, sometimes you look at someone and you go, I don't know. Or you look at someone and you say, huh, that's really somebody I feel very compatible with. It's all written there. And they say that it's there at the first imprint when the child is brought forth, that the face is literally comprises 95% of its personality, its inclinations, its temperament, and its physiological direction.
Now, in the book, you talk about reading the profile. What is a profile?
So the profile is when you look at the face from the side, and we generally look at the left side. There are four profiles that were described according to Ezekiel's vision. And what happened was God had shown Ezekiel an image of a chariot. And on the chariot were four posts. And on each post is a creature that had four faces, one of a lion, an ox, an angel, and an eagle. And when this has been extrapolated that each one of those animal faces represents a temperament of man slash woman. So we are all four, but as we're born, based on the choices that we make, we are predominantly one, then secondary another, and tertiary another, and quaternary another. So the bilious is the angel or man. The lion is the sanguine. The eagle is the nervous, and the ox is the lymphatic. And we are all four of those things, but our temperaments determine our basic nature or ability to process food, our ability to do things, ability to build muscle. Everything is determined in that temperament. And then what happens, well, you didn't ask this yet, but then what happens is that we have a front face, and the front face shape now tempers the temperament, meaning the personality is more read through the face. And then we have features, which then temper the front face. So it can get very specific.
So when you're talking about profile, you're actually, I thought you were talking about a profile of the face, but you're actually looking at the view from the side, the actual profile, I see.
Precisely.
So you talk about profile angles. What are profile angles? Is that the way that your jawline is slanted, or your nose?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That's how you can determine each of the temperaments. So the nervous actually has no angle. It goes straight. The jawline goes straight from the ear to the chin, while the sanguine is more like your American warrior football player kind of guy, where it goes straight down, or gal, where it goes straight down to a right angle and then to the chin. And the bilious goes 2/3 of the way down from the ear and then to the chin. And the lymphatic, you can't see it because of the flesh, you know, so there's no real angle to look at.
Gotcha. And the front face, talk to us about the front face.
So the front face has been correlated to the 12 different shapes that they gave the name of the planets. So if a person has a square face, that's considered an Earth. If a person has a rectangular front face, that's considered Mars. If a person has a round face, that's considered a Moon. And if it's an oblong, it's a Neptune. I mean, there's 12 of them. So what happens is that each of those front faces has a nature to it. Like, for instance, the Moon might be dreamy, or the Mars may be combative, and the Earth may be earthbound, but very, very good with money and things like that. So you can imagine that just by knowing this information, if you meet somebody and they want to be your accountant and they're an Earth, you go, okay, this guy knows about money. You know, I think he's going to do pretty well for me.
Now I'll ask you. I'll use myself as a example. Back in the day, when I was in college and in my early 20s, I was pretty thin. So I kind of had an angular face. My chin was, you know, kind of almost not quite pointy, but you know what I'm saying, kind of angular.
Yes.
And then over the years, I've gained more than a few pounds. So now I'm a little more flesh-faced, a little rounder and those things. Now, for me, looking at the outside, it's just because I put on weight. But what does that kind of thing portend to my temperament? Has my temperament changed? I mean, or is it just the fact that I've gained some weight?
Well, both. So what happens is that your temperament never really changes because that's the bony structure that lies underneath. So that stays the same. However, the personality changes, and the lymphatic is a more moderate, passive, temperate kind of individual. So that's the fleshy type. And if you had more of a pointy chin, you may have had a more inclination toward speedy, fast activity. So what happens is that might have slowed that down a little bit. They say that everybody becomes lymphatic with age because they all tend to put on a little bit of weight. But the lymphatic is, and this brings me to the one of the biggest reasons for writing this book, which is that the lymphatics are quite compassionate. And that's what we're hoping that people will understand from the reading of the face, because one might look at the face and feel a certain kind of judgment based on the standards and ideals of what's going on in society. You know, you look at the thin face or you look at the angular jaw and you say, oh, that's more desirable perhaps. But at that point, it had a cost, because it might have had a cost for the, you know, the extreme temperament could have caused that person to be a little bit more volatile or a little bit more reactive. While you look at the lymphatic, it's a lot temperate. I even wrote it in the book. I'm a large gal. And when my teacher looked at my belly, he said to me, nice library. Because one of the qualities of the lymphatic is that they're truly absorptive. And so they can take in large amounts of food and drink, but they can also take in large amounts of information, and they store it in their flesh. So everything has a meaning. Everything has a meaning.
Now, facial features. You also talk about facial features, the eyes, the eyebrows, and so forth. What are some of those meanings, and how do you read those?
Oh, it goes on and on and on. But one of the things that you want to understand about face morphology is, while it's very academic and you can, you know, and if you get the book, you could see all the different relationships and what's in there. But you get an intuitive hit when you see someone's face. Let's say, for instance, a person has an eyebrow that's going in an odd direction. That may be so, like, aware. It might jump into your awareness to such an extent that that may be something that that person is dealing with or grappling with in their life. So, for instance, they say the eyes are the windows to the soul, and you know that you could read a lot of emotionality in the eyes. When we look at it from a morphological point of view, we're looking at the shape, we're looking at the tilt, we're looking at the direction that the eye is moving, and each of those tell you something. Like, for instance, when the inside of the eye goes down, it kind of tends a little bit towards pessimism. While the inside of the eye goes up, it can lead toward optimism. When you look at the lips, you look at the upper lip and the lower lip, and you could tell a person's instinct. You can also see health issues. But let me also say that when you're looking at another individual, you want to get their permission to do this. It is a sacred art. You don't want to ever use the information that you have on a face against that individual. You know, this is done in a benevolent way. And the whole purpose of the book is to really give a person an understanding. Like, I have a friend of mine, and she really wanted to get a nose job because she has this very large, long, extended nose with a bump. All right. But if she had gotten that nose job, she might have lost all her ability to penetrate things in the world, because there are passive types and active types. So she needed that nose to pierce the world. And when she asked me about, you know, getting the surgery done, I had said to her, please don't. As a matter of fact, in Europe, especially France, where most of this is practiced, they say that if you want to get a surgical procedure, you have to see a morphologist first, because it can actually cause a psychotic break in an individual if you change what's going on in the face.
Now, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right. So like, for instance, if a person notices on themselves or loved ones that there's a blemish or something on a particular area of the face, the location will tell what's going on, not only in the face, but in the body. And so you could read these glyphs and understand a little bit about people that you know. Like, for instance, some people, they develop lines with life in certain areas, and those lines mean things. The eyebrows, like I happen to have a eyebrow that goes somewhat straight across. That's associated with stubbornness. And I know that about myself, you know, but it's there. And you know what? I actually shape the eyebrow to get rid of that. Like you could do orthodontry, you know, and certain things to change the
right.
certain characteristics that you know that you've come up with.
Now, well, something that was interesting to me, all of these things we talked about, I kind of figured, well, yeah, of course, the profile makes sense, the front face makes sense, the facial features, those make sense. I didn't realize you even read the muscles of the face.
Yes, and that's especially done for practitioners. Now, you see, I'm an acupuncturist and a chiropractor, so many years ago, I had a patient of mine who came to me who was, I would say, rock bottom depressed, you know, and he was under the care of a psychiatrist. He was on medications, but he was practically suicidal every day of his life. And when he came, he came to me for a lower back problem. But when he came, I had asked him in the intake interview if I had permission to read his face. And he said, yes. And I asked him about his depression. And he said, yeah, it's just something. He goes, my family has it. I don't know. So what I did was I actually did acupuncture around his mouth and face, and the depression lifted. Because if you make a change to the face, it goes inside. And that's the extraordinary thing. So like these, I get very specific about the muscles because I'm passionate about it, especially considering that case. But what happens is that if a person, let's say, has the commissures of their mouth going down, which is the little side pieces of their mouth, it's so simple to tell them. They'll just, while you're sitting there watching television or you're reading a book or whatever, just lift up the upper parts of your lip and hold them there. And if you keep doing that, that will make a change on the face. And that goes to what's called the law of reciprocity. So what happens on the outside can happen on the inside. And people have said that the bitterness is lifted. There are some people who have doubt in their chin. They feel like they're... They just don't trust themselves or whatever. You can actually do acupuncture to change the lines. So this book was written both for lay people and professionals. I didn't want to write two books, you know. So if you read it to learn about yourself and your loved ones, you can make these changes and understandings, but also from the point of view of a practitioner, you can help other people with the particular areas of the face that you observe.
So it strikes me from what you're saying that an important takeaway, one of them is this, is that if there's something in your face that exhibits a trait or a temperament or things to some extent, that's not a fait accompli. You may trend towards that way, but you can do things in your life and do things with your face that can change that. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. You got it. You hit the nail on the head. That's the whole point of it. That law of reciprocity is so important. And also there's something that's very simple to look at. If you notice when you're looking at a face, you have what's called the big face, which is the entire face in its circumference. When you look at the entire face, right? So the flesh of the face, everything there. And then you have what's called the features, which is called the small face. The relationship between the features at the big face and the little face will tell the person's ability to receive or put out in the world. Like, for instance, I had a lady come to me once, and when I looked at her, she practically had no outer face. She was all features, very attractive. You know, she had big eyes, big nose, big mouth, but very little space. And I said to her, are you able to, you know, handle things in the world? She goes, absolutely not. She goes, I can't even go to a concert and not feel overwhelmed by the sound. And when people say things to me, I'm really, really thrown off my game. So I said to her, okay, let's try a little exercise. Why don't you, you know, tuck your thumbs into your fists when you're in a situation like that and see if you can close your receptors a little bit so that you're not so overwhelmed. And then I had a young lad who came to me who had this big outer face. He had very small features. And the mother said to me, I can't get through this kid. He's just so difficult. And I said to him, you won't, because he has a very large, big face and very small features. So nothing's getting in. You have to really impress him with somehow with a distractive loud noise or something before you want to tell him something. And that helped her to be able to communicate with him. But you could see just from that, just this is like one little thing, large face, small face, look at the relationship, and you already understand how you're going to have a relationship with another individual, because you can understand how to communicate with them better without overwhelming them or without, you know, underwhelming them.
Now, and I don't even know if this is something that you do. Do you ever look at famous faces and try to infer things about them? Are there some you could share with us?
I didn't hear that. Excuse me?
I said, are there some you could share with us, some examples?
Yes, I can. Like Humphrey Bogart is a Saturn, all right? And then you look at James Cagney, he's an Earth face. You see how he has that kind of square face? And then you have Fred Astaire is a mercurial type. And you could even see it in his dancing. Like, he has that triangular face that goes long to the chin. So when you notice, Mercury is quicksilver. It's very fast movement. So look at the way he dances. I mean, it's just extraordinary. Even Michael Jackson has that shape, right? The triangular shape. You could see the profile of, let's say, Barbara Streisand, and how she always, when you look at her on her albums and she has that side profile, that's called the nervous type. She has this magnificent nose because that nose shows the intelligence. And everybody says that she was a perfectionist in her singing, and you could just see it in the nose. I mean, these are the things that are really quite amazing. Let's see, Christie Brinkley, I think, is like a Mars or Saturn. She's like that square jaw, homegrown American type gal. And then you have Sophia Loren, which is a Venus. She has that sort of heart-shaped face, but what's distinctive about Sophia Loren is that the outer part of her eyes go up, right? And when they go up, that usually shows a very, forgive the word, but sexual kind of personality. Like Jennifer Jones had that too. And when you look at actresses, very often they all, not all, but many have that Venus shape. Like Elizabeth Taylor, she has this heart-shaped face. And that is the quintessential woman face. Most men are very attracted to that. They don't even know it. Subconsciously, they look at that and they're just drawn to the heart-shaped face. And you know Venus de Milo, of course.
Right.
And the heart-shaped face. Yeah. So this is like the most, and I don't like to make standards and ideals, but they say it's the most attractive to the male shape, right? And if you look at like some of the personalities, I think it's intuitive in the caster. you know, the people that cast the roles, you will see like Clint Eastwood, right? He has these big indentations in his cheeks. You know what that shows? Fearlessness.
It's really? Like, interesting.
People know, like they know, like when you see people that have a big vein in the top of their head, they're adventurous. Like I think Tom Cruise has that. There's like all these features. It's so fun when you're looking at it from the point of view of morphology and say, look how great that was that they cast that person that way, you know? And even in Disney movies, you'll see that the bad guys always have these long chin faces, you know,
sure.
They're very bilious and they're very dominating and very overwhelming. While the cherubic little happy people have those Venus faces and they have the fleshy jaws and, you know, it's all over. Everybody knows it, but they don't know it. It's never been written. You know, this is just an intuitive imprint. They even find now that they can show the area of the brain that has facial recognition. You know?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things.
Well, faces are so important. I think people, kind of as you said, I think whether consciously or subconsciously, they make judgments about people based on their face. I just think that is, you know, it's the old judging the book by its cover. And sometimes I'm sure that's not quite fair, but I think people tend to do that. And I think it's instinctual and something we can't always control.
That's right. That's right. But what they're not doing, and that's why I wanted to write the book, is that if you look at a face and you see something, you don't know, let's say something is unattractive to you, but you have no idea what the other features are doing to balance that. And if you understood it, then you wouldn't have the judgment. You know, that was my greatest first lesson with my friend when he was arguing and arguing and arguing with his wife. And when they came to Jerry and he just told them their nature, they stopped getting all bent out of shape for these things that they just want. Because we want what we want it, and we want it now. And it's very difficult to appreciate and understand what's going on.
Now, I'm always very careful about when I mention something like this, because I think that people need to consult with their physician and so forth and make sure they need to do the things that they need to do for their health through traditional medicine. But I am interested about the health implications of the face, and what do you see?
Oh, yes. It's so amazing. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been around anyone who's had surgery. Generally, what happens after a person has had surgery, they have a change in their voice, and very often you look around their eyes, they're more pale or peaked or anything like that. These changes are so obvious, you know, that's why I pointed out that, because it's an energy drain. But one of the things that happens is that if you're living with someone and or you have children or you have close friends and you see, wait a minute, something's not right. I don't understand why her complexion is different or his complexion is different. I don't understand why that eye is drooping now or the lip is drooping. There are so many significant things that you can look at the face to determine wellness or illness. And you point it out to that individual and perhaps they can have an examination or they can get a professional evaluation. Like, for instance, I have people who send me pictures of them via the internet, and I do readings of the face, and I may have to say to that individual, I need you to go see this particular doctor or that particular doctor, because I may notice or observe something in the face that's pointing toward their ill health. But one of the things that is so simple is that the color, each temperament has a different color. So like the nervous temperament is yellow. Now, if the person comes in and they're very yellow, we might consider jaundice, but it could just be that they're a nervous type and you're not really reading it right. Or the sanguine has a red color. Now, if a person is beet red, a person might have high blood pressure. You got to be careful for that. But it just could be that they did a workout and they're sanguine. The kind of grayish, darkish, it's really not black, but because we confuse that now with skin pigment, but like when the circles around the eyes get dark, person may be lacking sleep or could be having kidney dysfunction or could be you know, manifesting some kind of illness, or it could just be that they're a bilious temperament. Like a lot of Italians have that darkness around their eyes. So understanding these things and really getting familiar with the morphology will be able to tell you, like, God forbid someone has a droop in their lip. They could have had a stroke or a TIA.
Right.
You know, you got to know that. Or they could have, now one of the biggest things that's going on in the world is Lyme disease. I don't know if you know this, but it's epidemic. The whole United States, it's epidemic. And so very often one of the first signs is Bell's palsy. And one of the distinctions in Bell's palsy is that if you could raise your eyebrows and frontalis is spared, then it could be what's called an upper motor neuron. But if the whole side of the face is drooping from the forehead all the way down to the chin, well, that could be Bell's palsy. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be from a tick bite, but it could also be, you know, from getting a cold wind attack, or, you know, that's how they speak in Chinese medicine. A cold wind attack is that the side of the face will just completely droop. It means that someone was either out in the cold or air conditioning was on them, and, you know, and that could resolve in days. But what I'm saying is the face reveals. It reveals just about everything.
Now, if someone is interested in this, certainly I would think that your book is a natural, The Art and Science of Face Reading. Also, if they're interested in connecting with a practitioner, I mean, it's not something you see every day, a face reader. How do they go about that?
So basically, there are people who have done this with Dr. Gerald Epstein, but right now, you know, there are not that many. I'm in the process right now of developing courses for certification for practitioners. So I'm sure within, you know, a couple of years, we're going to have many people now that are out there doing that. But there are people that can, you know, I don't really know that many people that advertise this. This is a unique kind of situation. And I hope and pray that a lot of the doctors and teachers and acupuncturists and chiropractors and osteopaths will learn about this, because it's such an enhancement to the practice. I mean, one time I had this gal come in, and she was sitting there, and I looked at her eyes and I said, this is not right. And she said to me, I just want to crack. I just want to crack. I got a headache. It's really bad. But I looked at her and I said, this is not right. I sent her straight to the hospital. It turned out that she had a subarachnoid bleed, you know, but you could see this in the eyes. And, you know, if I had just gone and cracked her neck, I may have killed her. So what I'm saying is that, without doing too much of a plug, I do have a website, and I do accept consultations through the mail, where people will send me a front face, a side face, a back of the head picture, and I can do an evaluation and send it back to them.
Very, very interesting. So if people want to pick up the book and or consult with you, how would they do both?
Yes, well, the drlamonica.com is my website, and I have a phone number that I can be reached at my office, if I may give it. It's 516-746-2025, and people can call and just make an appointment or ask a question. And the book is available at Barnes & Noble. It's available at Amazon. It's available at Costco, I think. It just came out on August 13th, so it's now available in many places. And at the publisher, which is Inner Traditions in Vermont.
Yes, they're great. They're always sending us books, and we're always interviewing their authors. They always have such fascinating ones. And you have been very fascinating. We've been talking about the art and science of face reading. Jennifer LaMonica, thank you so much for joining us today.
You are so welcome. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on The Other Side, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.